Welcome, mortal souls, to Strange Darkness Radio. Within the echoes of our hosts' haunting voices, terror weaves through the airwaves like a malevolent symphony. I am Benson, your spectral guide, leading you into the uncharted realms of the macabre. Brace yourself for a descent into a paranormal abyss with hosts Bobby Washington, Carolyn Gray, and Amy Tiedemann. They traverse through tales that linger in the shadows, spectral apparitions, haunted domains, cryptids, and otherworldly encounters. Embrace the darkness, extinguish the lights, steel your nerves for a bone-chilling night into the heart of the unknown. It's time for Strange Darkness Radio.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Ooh. And I've been waiting for this moment.
Welcome back to another episode of Strange Darkness Radio. It's your host, Bobby Washington, with
Carolyn Gray,
Amy Tiedemann.
Nice. How are you ladies doing tonight?
I am doing A-okay. I don't know about Carolyn.
Carolyn's not doing so hot tonight, so.
I don't want to answer for Carolyn. Yeah.
Carolyn, how's it going? What's been going on with you?
I'm great, but my headphones are real messed up. Did that intro sound weird to anybody else?
It did, yeah. No, it's a little patchy. So, Bobby, okay. I don't know if you can hear on your end what's going on.
No, everything is fine on my because it's being streamed. And again, we're trying actually something new. So we're on Google Meets, you know, doing it. We normally do it through Skype. And so, you know, we're trying something new tonight. Before we get to tonight's special guest, we have a special shout out to Sammy Rothman, CEO, founder, and designer of Oma World, based out of East Los Angeles. Hey, Sammy, we want to extend our deepest gratitude, man, because it's not often that you can just ring up a CEO of a company and they actually pick up the phone. They actually answer their emails. And if anything is wrong, they take care of it right then and there. The quality of your company, the quality of your mic, it all rings true. Man, unbelievable. Thank you so much for letting us display the Oma microphone. Let me get this right. The Oma condenser microphone on Strange Darkness Radio. Now we know what quality sounds like. Let me give you guys a little bit more information on this microphone. This microphone is crafted with precision and care. I'm not even joking. The design is unreal. It's flawless. The metal construction is just uncanny. You know, at the heart of this condenser microphone lies something called the Little Debbie. A signature handmade capsule designed to deliver a timeless sound with an extended frequency response, paired with a vintage Cinemag transformer. This microphone exudes richness. The characteristics of my voice, the quality of what I'm hearing, it's just amazing. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm sorry. But yeah, this mic is amazing. If my boy Baloo was on this podcast tonight, he would just be spazzing out because the quality is just, he wouldn't even give this mic back. This mic has to go back. I'm not getting paid for anything. I'm not getting paid for any commercials I run on this product. It's because the product is so amazing. The quality is so unreal. So again, if you guys are singers out there, if you're musicians who need, they have the ribbon version of the microphone. If you need that, you can pick it up. You can order it. The mic is amazing. Again, the quality, you can hear it. Hear for yourself. You tell me. So anyways, we got to get back to the show. We have an amazing guest on tonight, John Radke. So let's go ahead and Get it on and popping. Benson, let's roll.
Are you prepared to delve into the depths of the paranormal? Bobby and Carolyn recently appeared on the Dairyland Frights podcast, and now John Radke, the host of Dairyland Frights, is joining Bobby, Carolyn, and Amy on Strange Darkness Radio. John's fascination with the supernatural, fueled by personal encounters and inspired by his hometown, led him on a quest to unearth chilling tales from the heart of the Midwest. From eerie childhood memories in his grandmother's Iowa farmhouse to his mother's interest in all things supernatural, John's passion for the paranormal runs deep. Dairyland Frights has evolved into a hub for all things eerie, exploring various paranormal phenomena and haunted histories. From dissecting the minds of notorious serial killers to investigating haunted locations, John and his guests leave no eerie stone unturned. With milestones like 10,000 downloads and collaborations with fellow creators, Dairyland Frights continues to enthrall audiences with its spine-tingling narratives and Midwest mysteries. Join us tonight as we unravel the secrets of the unknown with the one and only John Radke.
John, welcome to Strange Darkness Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a heck of an introduction. Boy, I didn't know I was so dark and so eerie.
You have a reputation, John.
Exactly.
I do. I feel like I'm in this mansion on top of a hill, and there's like clouds, and like, you know, I open the door, creak. Hello, Bobby, Amy, and Carolyn. Welcome.
Nice.
Also,
nice.
Benson's voice. He just gives that creepy quality to everything he says.
Yeah. For sure,
I like Benson. That was a great, like I said, great introduction. Thank you. And thank you for having me back. I missed all of you. You guys are killing it. I listen to you guys all the time. And it's really cool to be back on the show. And, you know, I love when I have you guys on.
So. Exactly. No, thank you. Definitely. So how have things been, you know, since your whole rise in the podcast game? You've been doing spectacular. We're going to talk about other subjects, but I want to talk about you, how you got into it, and the reason why you got into everything you've been into in the podcasting realm.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. I really appreciate it because I'm a one-man band. I'm running the kind of the show by myself, which is fine. I have a lot of fun. The one thing that really got me into it, I think you guys already mentioned, was being at my grandmother's farmhouse when I was a kid. I mean, think about your stereotypical creepy farmhouse. That was my grandma's, right? Just an old farmhouse. And, you know, I had an experience where like this door opened and there was nobody behind it. And my grandma was like, yeah, it's the wind, it's whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I heard footsteps all the time. So I got really interested in that. And then my mom would read books on the paranormal and books on serial killers. And when I was like 10 years old, I would ask my mom, you know, what's that about? And she, you know, hey, it's about Ed Gein, which one
like
of the topics.
Like a bedtime story?
Yes, my mom would sit there. And then he took the hatchet and put the... Mom, what are you doing to me, Mommy? You're killing
me. Good night,
me.
Sweetie.
Good night, tree.
Yeah, those were my kind of bedtime stories too, so I can relate.
Wow.
And then I've been on numerous ghost tours. I've been on to like over 16 ghost tours. Wow. Also been on 4 shut-ins. Unfortunately,
okay, wait.
Not seen a lot of paranormal.
Okay, but you're rolling too quick there. We definitely have to talk about the shut-ins as far as you actually going to a location. And I don't know if you guys were old school where they lock you in for, you know, let's say you go in at 7 or 8 and they don't unlock it until 6 or 5. Was it one of
and
those?
And you stay overnight?
Correct.
Oh, wow. You said you haven't experienced anything on those ghost tours?
No, I think ghosts know that I want to see them. You know, they're like, oh, this guy, he's just, oh, well, I'm going to go scare the crap. Yeah. I'm going to go scare the crap out of Bobby or Carolyn. This guy, yeah, he doesn't care.
Well, no, I have the same problem. I want to see one so bad, and I never have. Well, I never have seen anything.
Now, you know, I've had feelings and stuff like that. And one of the shut-ins I was at was this haunted theater in Chicago. And they locked the doors about, actually, we came in about 10 o'clock. And we were there to about 6 in the morning. And then what you really do, I highly recommend someone to try this. Pick the where you would like to go. You have paranormal investigators with you. They do it safely, so you're not like, you know, breaking your leg, tripping over something, or falling off a balcony in the middle, because they shut off all the lights. Okay, you are in the dark, and then they give you like little things like what I call the minor flashlight, when you put headlamps on your head.
Yeah,
the headlamps.
Yeah, you kind of stumble around, and then you'll go with a paranormal investigator with some type of EMF device, some type of whatever they're using, some temperature gauges, whatever. And then you walk around the theater. And when I did the theater experience in Chicago, one woman, and believe this is an experience you got to experience. So we were all sitting there, it was near the end, and we were all just eating snacks. They have like a little snack table for you, so you can have like, you know, whatever. So we're eating snacks and we're just talking. And then all of a sudden, we just blood-curdling scream. Like, you know, I can't do it, but you can imagine.
Yeah.
I'll try. No, just kidding.
That'll be in post.
That'd be hilarious, by the way. So we're all like, oh, my God. And we all go running out. And there's this woman, and she's just shaking. And she's just shivering. And we're like, oh, okay, well, what happened? And she saw this little girl with black eyes standing front of her. Plain as day.
Wow.
As you would see like a little girl on the street corner, whatever, you know, coming up to you, and flipped out. And the paranormal investigators who have done this numerous times have said, I think her name was Mary. And she was a little girl that she burned alive in a fire in that theater. People were like trampling basically other people, and the people that got trampled, well, they burned alive. This was like late 1800s, something like that. So there wasn't like, you know, like sprinklers.
It was fire safety.
It was every person for themselves. So most people got trampled to death or burned alive. Take your choice.
Wow.
So was it a theater at the time when that fire happened? Because I feel like I've heard of this little child ghost in this theater.
This is a common thing, believe it or not. People bring their children with them. Usually wealthier people bring their children to see a play. And then, unfortunately, some would die. Some stories I've done at this. It's just the way it was. Or a little girl fell over the balcony to her death. Or you probably have heard these different stories. But it was a theater at that time, and then it was different iterations to finally they built it back up to be a theater again, where you can go and watch live plays or live music. But it was, you know, I tell you, when you're just sitting there like 3 or 4 in the morning, and all of a sudden you heard just this blood curdling scream, woo, that'll get the blood flowing.
Wow.
Did they allow like any recording at any of these ghost hunts or anything?
Yes. So you would go, like I said, you'd go different paranormal investigators. It depends what equipment they had with them. But they played past recordings for us before we went out. And there were some that were just, there were recordings that said, get out. There were recordings that say, I'm going to kill you. There were recordings of crying children or giggling children, and they would play this for us. And when you hear it, you know, you're just, because it's like you hear the static, right? You just hear the whatever noises, air conditioning going on, and then you hear like a hee 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 hee, and you're like, oh shit.
What you know, I up for?
So were the voices like on those you know, like what's it called, where it's like through radios they pick up voices?
Spirit box.
Is that like where you have you guys heard those?
No, they were just using at that time just regular something like old tape recorders you would use to take now that our phones do everything, but back in the day when you actually had to have a physical tape recorder and do that. So they would have these really nice small handheld tape recorders with really nice mics on them, and they would pick up everything.
So it was like the actual spirit's voice as opposed to like coming through a spirit box then.
Absolutely. And like I said, the one that said get out was, wow, it was this deep man's voice. It was like, get out. And it was just
yeah, I would have run out the door if I heard that you say.
That's scary.
Yeah, we are. Well, we didn't want to stay, but we already paid the money. And
might as well get your money's worth.
Might as well, right?
No refunds.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you still go out and do ghost hunts? Or do you just get paranormal teams to come on your show?
Yeah, so occasionally I go out. So I am right near, if you're familiar with the famous architect, Frank Lloyd Wright, his house, or I call it a mansion, is like right like a third of a mile away from me, which is haunted by his wife and children who were killed, who were burned alive by a servant.
Is that a
who was
common thing
in- with his wife?
Where you're at.
Oh my gosh.
Is that what's happening?
Yeah, you can read the newspaper article. It's on Google. You just Google it. It's horrible. Absolutely horrible.
But he didn't die in the house?
No, he did not.
Right?
No, he did not. And the graveyard where he is buried, I've gone to a couple times and tried to get a recording or just try to get a feeling, but I've never really picked up anything other than a creepy vibe. You know what I mean? And I'll take pictures of it and put it on my Instagram sometime, because it's in this creepy area right off the road. And at night, man, it just, woof, you just go like, I'm good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Take my pictures and I'm out.
Dang. So have you ever, you know, got any EVPs in the cemetery? And how often do you actually go out to cemeteries?
Yeah. Not that often anymore. I haven't really gotten anything to be particular, but when I was in Savannah, I went on a tour in Savannah, Georgia, but I highly recommend go to Savannah, Georgia if you can. It's one of the most haunted cities in the United States, and people there are totally cool about the paranormal. They're just like, yeah, it's haunted.
We're used to it.
Yeah, it's no big deal. So when we went on the tour, they took us to the Sorrel Weed House, which is one of the most haunted houses in the world. And this is where a Civil War general, colonel, excuse me, where his family was poisoned by their slave. Because
I know that story.
The colonel was having an affair with the slave. And the wife said, you know, basically beat her to death.
Yeah, we did a story on that.
Nearly beat her to death. And to find, you know, when she found out. And she poisoned, the wife died and two of the kids died.
Yeah, she poisoned the family. The
colonel died a little later, I believe, in there. But I remember walking in, and you walked in this house, and it's immediately like, ugh. You just have a feeling like a heavy wet coat, right? And I walked in there, and there's this voodoo symbol in the, well, we would call it a den. And there's this voodoo symbol on the floor when you walk in. And the people tell you, the tour guides tell you, go, whatever you do, do not step on this symbol, because it's meant to curse you. Oh my God. The whole group took a step back.
Can we cover that up? Can we please cover that up?
They should have it like cordoned off then, because what if someone's not paying attention later? And
they did. See, what she did was, the slave woman, she put that on there and then threw the carpet over. And so when the family would walk across, right, the kids would play on it. The kids and he walk. When they were doing renovation at the Sorrelweed house, they lifted up the carpet and voila.
That's the original mark.
Because I think when we told the story, we had it more so just from the research that she had poisoned the family. And then once they found out, I believe they hung her or something, you know, it was the townspeople and everything. So, interesting.
They eventually got a mob and they killed this woman. The other thing about it was super funny. We went in the basement and it's like the best way to describe it is it's like a serial killer basement. I mean, it's dirt and just like if you were caught in this basement, you're dead.
Well, it's like a root cellar, right? So the walls are like
Dirt. But they expanded it. And anyway, I thought it was really, I always tell this funny story. So I was there by myself. I was on business and I was just trying to, just do something fun while I was on business. And, but I was walking down and there was two older women in their 60s, like grab my arms. Ooh. And they're like, sweetie, you need to protect us. I'm like, what am I going to do?
That is too funny. That's too funny. But you know, hey, there's security in numbers, so that's they were going off of that for sure.
Safety in numbers.
Yes,
feel safer.
The other thing they take you on is the cemetery, but they will not let you in of all things at night. The reason why cemetery was desecrated by Union soldiers when. If you know your history, I'm a big history buff. I'm a history nerd.
Yeah.
If you know your history, Sherman did a march to the sea and he just laid waste to all the southern towns. He just burned them and did terrible things. Mm-hmm. Well, in the cemetery, what the soldiers were cold. So their genius idea was to take all the bodies out of the mausoleums, just throw them on the ground, go into the mausoleum, start fires and keep warm. People would also dig up fresh graves, throw the skeletons out, go into the grave because it's warmer, right, with the ground and everything, and have a little fire. So there were
skeletons
drooling everywhere, okay? Wow. And nobody cleaned this up until, later.
Yeah.
So walk past the cemetery. The reason we didn't go in was because the guy said, well, two things are going to happen to you. One, you're going to get pushed. Two, you're going to go out with marks. Three, you're going to get sick. And four, I don't know what else bad could happen to you. So we're not going in there.
Yeah.
And so I was like, literally the guy said, you have to sign a waiver to go in there. Like, so we're not going to do that. So we just walked past. But this is the thing I tell people. So after the tour, I was walking past by myself and, you know, I got out my iPhone and I was just like, I'm going to take some pictures. Well, I took a bunch of pictures, right? None of them turned out. Not one.
Wow.
And then I came back to my hotel room and I just started taking pictures around my hotel room. See, it's my stupid camera, you know, in here. Yeah, I got to get a new phone or something. Perfect pictures. Absolutely perfect.
Oh,
so
that is weird.
I know. And then this was the funniest thing out of all. I go downstairs to talk to the, the manager, and I tell her what I did. And she looks at me, she goes, oh, darling, you never walk in Savannah alone at night. Are you crazy? I mean, she was adamant about it. Now, two things I found out. One, it's a crime ridden city and it's good chance I could get mugged. And two, spirits like to attach themselves supposedly to people who are walking alone. And so she was adamant, like, do not do that again. That was really dumb. You can't do that. And then I told her about my phone. She goes, oh, yeah, you never get a picture there. Trust me. It's especially at night. Mm-hmm. It's just too full of bad mojo or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. You know, so I highly recommend you go to that. There's some great tours down there. Be careful when you're walking around. But
do you still have those pictures, even the blurry ones that you took?
No, my old phone. I got a new phone, so my old phone, I didn't save any of them. But they weren't even distinguishing, Carolyn. They were you look like, you know how sometimes you sit on your phone with your butt and then it takes a picture or something. Yeah. You get like a butt picture and you're like looking at it, you're like, when did I take this picture? What the hell? And you're like, oh shit, I have my camera. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Well,
let me ask you this. In this whole process of you doing the whole ghost tours and, you know, doing ghost investigation and all that good stuff, what prompted you to start a podcast? Was it that you just wanted to have the experience of talking to other people that had like-minded ideas and hear their stories? Like, what prompted that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I could talk to fun people like yourself. I have spoken to people I didn't think I would never speak to in my normal life. I've speak to a witch from the Netherlands, a practicing witch, a practicing Satanist. I've spoken to numerous paranormal investigators who've told me some freaky ass stories. And I'm just fascinated by the whole mystery of it because, again, you know, like I tell people, is what's beyond this? There has to be something beyond. And it's not necessarily the Hollywood tripe, right? Like movies like Insidious or The Conjuring, where it's negative energy and it's bad energy. That's what sells, right?
Yeah.
But there's also, I've spoken to people who have said, you know what? I felt like someone pulled me out of the way of this moving car, or I was, you know, sleeping one night and I woke up and don't know why I woke up and realized there was a small fire in my house, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just
where they can
really cool you. Stuff that help you. Yeah. So I love hearing that stuff. And especially I've spoken to people from England and how they view Americans paranormal versus our paranormal. Like, they got to remember, like in London, you walk down the street and it's that building is 800 years old, 1,000 years old. It's crazy, right? Like, they hung people. They you know, they tortured people in this building that you're having a drink at.
Yeah.
And in America, you're more like, well, I got to go maybe to the Northeast or somewhere where it's a little more rich tradition. But in like, I was talking to this guy who lived in London. He was like, oh yeah, you know, I walk out there, my pub, it's haunted. People were killed in the basement. Okay. People are hung outside the pub. It's just right.
Yeah. You hear that a lot. To them. Exactly. That's pretty awesome. I do love, again, you don't technically have a co-host, but you have a co-host, meaning the person that you pod with, that you reach out to. I think that is freaking ingenious. And, you know, it always keeps things fresh. So that's really a great concept to do.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
What drew you to that? You're like, okay, that's how I'm going to do it, opposed to just doing it myself and, you know, trying to get guests on and that whole process.
Yeah, believe it or not, it was out of necessity. I had originally two of my coworker friends with me when we did the first like 25 episodes together, and then they just got burned out.
Yeah,
They were just like, John, I can't do the research. Like, you know, they're starting a family. Mm-hmm. They're doing all, and it was just really hard for them to do that. So I was like, hey, I love you both, but I gotta move forward with this. And I have them on from time to time. And then I just thought, I want to listen to people who I want to listen to. So that's why, you know, I'll go on Instagram or whatever. I'm like, wow, that's super interesting. Mm-hmm. I want to have that person on. They sound like a fun person, or they have maybe an interesting story, or they have an interesting concept. And you know, I just had really nice people from Hot Garbage True Crime TV show, TV podcast, I should say. And they were on there and they were like talking about all this crazy stuff and they were joking about it. And I was like, I never would have thought, you know, they would do something like that. it's true crime. It's terrible. These people do terrible things, and they're not, they're joking about it, but they're having fun with it. And that's what I love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. Any of Carolyn, you have any questions, Amy?
Yeah, I really want it. So I read the article about you. I forget the name of the article, but I was very interested to hear that you wanted to buy the Amityville house. And yes, that, like, that's crazy to me. What? Why did you want to buy that house? And like, you don't care about the history? Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, so what was really funny about that, I've always wanted to live in a haunted house. Like, I talked to my guest, and they're like, oh, I lived in a haunted house all my life. Or I don't understand the concept of that, of like, they would tell me, oh, yeah, I go downstairs and I see a shadow person. Oh, the cupboards are open again. Oh, mm-hmm. Something tickled my feet. Oh, I'm on it. And I'm like, boom, my head just explodes. I'm like, there's no way. So what's really, I've always wanted to buy a haunted house. And I've looked at it. And then one day I have like a Google alert. And one day the Amityville house came on sale. So I said, yes. So I immediately called the realtor, and I said, hey, and the realtor, by the way, I got to have her on. She's been doing the real estate in that area for like 30 years. She's awesome. Very funny lady. So I call her and she's like, all right, let me ask you first. Are you a paranormal investigator? And I'm like, no. And then she goes, but do you like the paranormal? And I say, yeah, I love it. And she goes, okay. She goes, I'm going to settle something right for you right now. And I've told this story many times. The Amityville Horror house is not haunted. It's never been haunted. It's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's made up. Mm-hmm. The reason why is because she's been doing real estate in that area for over 30 years. Okay. She knew the DeFails or a DeFi, whatever their name was. Yeah, they were crazy, drugged up, messed up people. Okay. Mm-hmm. The dad was on drugs. The son was on drugs. The daughter was on drugs. Mom's probably on drugs. Oh. Everybody was on drugs. She tells a story about William DeFail would come out in his underwear and come out in the yard and like scream and howl at the moon and stuff. And neighbors would be like, oh my God, this guy's out of his mind.
Wow. Yeah.
So I asked her about this and I said, so people were murdered in that house. And she said, well, yes, they were. It's unfortunate. She was a young woman when this happened. She hadn't been in real estate at that time. And she told me that it's unfortunate. And everybody like were like, oh my God. But she was kind of in the back of her mind, like, yeah, something's going to happen in that house. So when someone bought the house, the people who wrote the books, and I can't think of the name off the top of my head, basically they said they heard stuff and some weird stuff. So they basically, over a glass of wine, or I should say a bottle of wine, I'm thinking many bottles of wine, came up with this story. So she's been in that house multiple times. There is no murder room. There is no blood on the walls. There is no nasty demons. She has sold this house numerous times. If you go look at the house, it's not people move out because demons and it's scary. It's because it is a handful and a half. It's a huge, gorgeous house. Mm-hmm. You would have to get a maid to take care of that house. It has its own boathouse.
And it's old too, right?
Very old.
Yeah.
The people had to change their address because it was on whatever address. So paranormal investigators would show up and take pictures and try to get into the break into the house and all this stuff. And she said people were more scared of who lived in the house of that, like showing, like coming home from work. How would you like to come home from work and see some dude trying to break into your house?
Exactly.
And it's just some weird paranormal,
Right.
Wake up in the morning and look out your window and there's this weirdo on the lawn, paranormal investigator
peeking in your windows.
Yeah. I mean, that's enough's enough. Right. So anyway, I said, I don't care. I want to buy it. What do we need to do? So I'm going through the whole process and everything. And then my wife with the kibosh got it. She's like, I am not moving to upstate New York.
That's funny.
taking my job and our kids at that time and moving. I'm like, come on, hon, this is gonna be great.
Yeah,
love the. I was so enthusiastic. I was like, oh, this is gonna be so great. This is gonna be so much fun. And I had a plane ticket to fly out there and tour the house. And then I talked to the woman, and she was like, well, you know, do you really want to come out here just to see a house? You're probably not going to buy. I'm like, yeah, you know, I want to. And she's like, well, no, I'm busy. So, no, I never got inside the house, unfortunately. But I was filling out the paperwork. I had all bank loans going.
Wow.
And, but she sent me pictures constantly, and I have to try to find them. I think it's on one of my old computers. So I made her take a copy of where the gate to hell is. You take a picture of it and send me that. I had to take pictures all over the house, and I know I have them somewhere. I have to look for them. But she was adamant. She's like, John, if you really want a haunted house, I know where some haunted houses are, but this is not it. So you're going to be disappointed. And she said, people, you know, like I said, typically move out because it takes a lot of work with this house, and they're sick and tired of people showing up, you know, and just causing problems. But, you know, she was just more like, again, yeah, it's blown out of proportion and it's all fake. So I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but that's what it is. So
there's a really good documentary, and it's free on YouTube. It's a long one. There's like 7 parts. But John, if you haven't seen this, you might like it. It's called Shattered Hopes, and it tells the true story of the Amityville horror. But in the documentary, they interview family members that, you know, had never, people didn't even know they existed, of the DeFeos, including Ronnie DeFeo's wife. So Ronnie DeFeo's the one that murdered his family, right, and he went to prison. He had a wife that nobody knew about. And so she, a lot of the documentary is based on what she says. And I guess that family, like you said, they were drug addicts and there was a lot of abuse and they were just a really messed up family. But they also had mafia ties on both sides of the family. And so when Ronnie got arrested, his grandfather actually came to visit him and convinced him to go along with this demon possession story. Yeah,
plead insanity.
Just specifically so that they wouldn't investigate any further and that they would leave the family business, you know, kind of alone. So it's a really, really good documentary. But I think, but my point is, I think it's a good thing you didn't waste your money on a not haunted house, because it sounds like the whole thing was
made. My kids would have been miserable. They would have been like, I don't want to be here, kind of.
But you would have been okay, John, like with the history of the DeFeos. Like, you would have
absolutely
it's still sleeping. Creepy.
Like,
family was murdered there.
I could never.
It is still a creepy story. And, you know, I can see why your mind might, you know, go away with you, right?
But it's also...
There could be bad energy.
Yeah, it's also like what Amy said. At the end of the day, a family was murdered there. So who knows when those things might surface and what can bring those things out. And a lot of people doing a lot of so-called, if you believe in, whether it's black magic, voodoo, witches... particular things that can probably draw energy to, you know, manifest anything. So anything's possible these days. But definitely. Let's go ahead and take a break, and then we'll be right back, and maybe we'll change up the story. We'll be right back.
Step into the extraordinary with Strange Darkness Radio, where every whisper holds a secret and every sound tells a tale. And guiding us through this mysterious journey is none other than the Oma Condenser microphone, a masterpiece of craftsmanship and innovation. Meticulously fine-tuned and hand-painted, the Oma Condenser microphone is more than just a pretty face, it's a work of art. With its unmatched sound quality and unbelievable craftsmanship, every word spoken resonates with clarity and depth, transporting listeners to realms beyond imagination. But that's not all. The Omar microphone offers a level of customization like no other. With interchangeable metal screens, you have the power to not only shape your sound universe, but also create a look that is uniquely yours. From the elegance of champagne pink brass, from the sophistication of motif black brass, to the enchantment of motif copper rose gold, the possibilities are endless. Experience the solid, warm sounds of the Omar microphone, where every note is well balanced and every nuance is captured with precision. With its signature handmade capsule and vintage Cinemag transformer, it delivers a timeless sound that transcends the ordinary, striking a perfect balance of classic color and musical detail. So visit omarworld.com, let your voice shine through, and design your reality. Now let's get back to Strange Darkness Radio.
All right. So, Carolyn, did you want to get into a different part of John's story?
Yes.
I'm scared. Just for the record.
Last people. Time when we... Oh, sorry, Bobby.
No, go. I'm just telling last time. I'm scared.
So when we were on John's show last time, he kind of teased us with a little personal story that he has about two serial killers. And the first one we're going to get into is Ed Gein. I did prepare a introduction for the Ed Gein topic. And just a disclaimer, it is going to sound a little funny because I did it very last minute. So nobody get mad at Bobby. This is on me. Nobody get mad at Bobby Benson. Yeah, this is on me.
Yeah. No one will get mad anyways. I just want to let people know that Benson's okay. And, you know,
he's not drunk. It's my fault.
Yeah. This is, yeah. Anyways, let's just play it. Here we go. On the show, we actually threw this out to Benson to do last minute. And that's what the whole laughter and conversation was about. But we do have a new onboard AI that we will touch into from time to time during the actual podcast, just to like, you know, it's more of a concept of phone a friend. If there's a particular topic that we're looking for information on or just something like that, we're able to now use this particular AI to answer questions right on the fly, something I don't have to program or already set in motion. So, and it's really good. So we're going to go ahead and let Edison do this reading that Carolyn sent to me an hour before the show. So here's Edison.
Ed Gein, also known as the Butcher of Plainfield, was an American murderer and suspected serial killer with two confirmed victims and seven suspected ones. He was notorious for grave robbing and crafting items from human organs, skin, and bones. His gruesome activities have inspired numerous books and films, including Psycho, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Silence of the Lambs. Born on August 27, 1906, in Plainfield, Wisconsin, Gein lived in a small town where the disappearance of women began to stir unease. Among the missing was Bernice Warden, a local hardware store owner. Her son Frank, a deputy sheriff, discovered that Ed Gein was the last customer before his mother's disappearance. When authorities visited Gein's home for questioning, they encountered a house of horrors. The residence was filled with clutter, except for his mother's bedroom, which Gein had preserved as a shrine. Investigators were horrified to find items made from human body parts, including lampshades, gloves, and masks crafted from human skin, bowls made from skulls, and furniture constructed from bones. In a shed on the property, they discovered Bernice Warden's decapitated body hanging upside down. Gein was arrested and confessed to the murders of Warden and another woman, Mary Hogan, and admitted to grave robbing and necrophilia. On November 21st, 1957, Gein was arraigned on one count of first-degree murder in Washara County Court, pleading not guilty by reason of insanity. Diagnosed with schizophrenia and found mentally incompetent, He was committed to Central State Hospital and later transferred to the Mendota Health Institute, where he died in 1984 at the age of 77. In March 1958, Guine's house was destroyed by arson, an act never solved or prosecuted. Today, the site of Guine's heinous acts is an empty, overgrown lot, a grim reminder of the atrocities committed there.
But yeah, let's get into this craziness, because this is just extremely unreal as far as the things that this man was doing. Wow.
It's crazy story.
So let me, go ahead, Carol.
Well, I was just going to say, I did leave a lot out of that little intro because I wanted us to actually be able to discuss it on the show. So, yeah, but go ahead. You can start this off since you knew someone who knew him, apparently.
Yeah, but let me start with some interesting facts for your audience. And one of the interesting facts is Ed Gein was a tremendous babysitter. He babysitted most of the kids in Plainfield. In fact, I have a friend from a podcast, Badgerland Legends, give a shout out for him, that his aunt was babysat by Ed Gein.
And he did a good job. Like,
he was phenomenal. He would play with the kids. He would have great times. People didn't even bat an eyelash. Kids loved him. The night before he was captured, or, they went into his house, he was having dinner with one of the baby families, whatever you want to say, and they just loved him. Like, everyone in town knew Ed Gein was weird and a little off, but they never
suspected that.
No one suspected this. No one.
No children that he babysat. Like, there were no missing kids ever in that town, right? So he didn't harm a hair on those kids.
Wow. Okay. Wouldn't even harm a hair on them. You know, and he was just renowned for doing that. Like, people would be like, he's so good at this. And, it's
Jesus.
That's bizarre, yeah.
So the other fact that Benson did say, he's suspected in killing 7 people, but they only can put 2 people to his crimes, to his serial killing. And that's my hard thing. I do not call him a serial killer, because there's only 2 people that they can say he
actually murdered.
They can actually prove it. And serial killers, 3 or more. Why? I don't know. They came out 3 or more, but that's it. So
can I interrupt you just real quick? I want to know if you, so I was going to get into this when we talk about his upbringing or whatever, but one of the suspected murders is actually his own brother, who there was some kind of like a brush fire, and Ed Gein, went and got the authorities, and that he told them that there was a fire and he didn't know where his brother was, but then he wound up leading them straight to his brother's body.
Yes.
And the body was not burnt at all. So to me, that's pretty convincing of a third victim right there. So that's why I do consider him a serial killer. But my question for you is, do you know of any other victims specifically that he's suspected of killing?
Not really. I've read a few books on him, and there were some women in the area that he did not like. So the thing about Ed Gein's mothers too, she did not let him date. She called women the devil, and she would say, women are the devil. You cannot date anybody. They're going to hurt you. They're going to bring pain to you. And to me, to this day, I'm like,
yeah,
why would she say that? Like, you know what I'm saying? Right. There was no incestuous relationship that no people know of.
It's been implied, but he never said anything.
There was nothing. It's really strange. So when he would like a woman and bring her home, his mom would just flip out on him. And she would just berate this poor girl, calling her, a whore and a hussy or whatever the terms they used at that time. Mm-hmm. And then, they would just, he'd be like, okay. Yeah. And she just berate him for doing that. It's just really weird. The other thing which I found really interesting is his gravestone is no longer at the Plainfield Cemetery, so you cannot go there and see his gravestone. And you may ask why. Because people were chipping off a piece of his gravestone and selling it on eBay. Now, there's some funny stories with it. People who have said they've gotten that supposed grave, a stone or whatever you want to say, piece of it, have said they have like shadows in their house. They have felt dread. They have felt just negative energy. So most people have thrown it out or have sold it again. Mm-hmm. Now you ask, where's the gravestone now, John? It is in the Plainfield City Hall, locked up in the basement. So if you wanna break into there, which I don't recommend,
try to chip off a piece.
And try, that's where all the cops are, so they'd probably shoot you. And we do not want anybody gonna get shot over trying to get his to me, that's something that it was really interesting that people would do that. But okay.
Well, so I have then, a.
Oh, so oh, I was just back then. This was a bigger deal because they weren't used to this stuff. But anyways, sorry, Amy.
No. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, that's it. Just I also read that they used to chip off pieces of his tombstone, and that's just because back then they didn't know what serial killers were. This was just a huge weird story to them. So
Like one question. I was going to say one question that I had was: weren't the two women that it was known that he killed? Didn't they say like they resembled his mother or something like that or
something like that? I think it's more he thought they were hitting on him, like trying to like it's Wisconsin. We're all Wisconsin nice. So you might count that as flirty, right? For some people. And maybe he thought that, and he would hear his mother's head in his head all the time, mother talking to him. So maybe he thought, oh, she's a hussy, she's a whore. I have to.
So I'm going
to
shoot Mary Hogan in the face because I don't know. Flirted with me. Jesus.
Sure.
Wow.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Interesting.
He had a very weird psychology because this is why. Norman Bates is based off of him in Psycho because some of the items, and I have a list of everything they found in his house that I'm going to read off, but some of the items were like, it was like he was trying to create a suit, like a skin suit out of these women's body parts. And some people think that he was actually acting as his mother. He would put on these skin pieces and pretend to be his own mother. Which is so bizarre.
So imagine this. This is from one of the books. They did a drawing in it, and I can't remember the title of the book. It's probably just Ed Gein's Serico. But anyway, he would take fishing line, and then he would take the woman's face and put it on his face and put the torso of the woman on him, and he would dance in the moonlight in cemeteries. So imagine you're in a small town, taking a walk, just a nice summer night, and you see this man with a woman's face and body parts. Like, he would take a woman's vagina and her breast and put it on, like, a little, and he would dance around and sing and dance. And the other reason somebody said that is because he admitted in open court that he did.
Wow.
And he really had to have been seen by someone.
It's not just conjecture.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, right.
Someone had to have seen him. He would look like, if anyone has seen Chainsaw Massacre, Leatherface, how he wears those creepy face masks. I mean, it would look like that, dancing in a cemetery. And this really happened. I mean, this is terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Amy.
Oh, I was going to say, I think there's a third movie that's inspired by him too, is Silence of the Lamb, which shows the guy, isn't he like dancing around with parts of them on him? Or I can't remember that scene.
The women. No, you're right. Silence of the Lambs is also based on Ed Gein, and he kidnaps women and then he starves them because the idea is that he wants to make a human woman suit out of their skin. So, creepy stuff.
The last thing about it, which I think is kind of funny, is to make it not as serious, is he would live on pork and beans. So when the cops would come in, he just would eat pork and beans and throw the cans on the floor. So when they came in, imagine coming in to all these body parts. Yeah. It's the 50s, mind you. There's pork and beans cans everywhere. It's like he's a hoarder. And then there's just lamps made out of skin, a chair made out, and like I said, Carolyn, you have the list. That's what blows me away the most, because you're a small town police officer. I live in a small town. If this happened today, it would still freak people out, right?
Oh,
but not to the extent it's the 50s, right? Yeah. And all they're dealing with is a farmer maybe getting drunk and going down the street in his tractor, or somebody shooting or poaching something. They're not dealing with skin sofas, skin lamps, and
they literally didn't even know what serial killers were back then. I mean, this was before like the big serial killer boom that happened.
Yeah. So,
he's one of the OGs.
But basically, he had to have been getting the bodies from the, you know, from the graveyards, because, or from the mortuaries or somewhere where they were fresh enough to get the skin. And then, you know, some he probably got from the actual cemetery to make the furniture, you know, from the bones and different things. So no one ever reported, you know, grave robbing or missing bodies or anything?
Grave robbing.
I'm sure they did. And I'm sure the cops probably went, sure. Whatever. I get you. The last thing is, and I have this on my Instagram, is someone bought Ed Gein's cauldron, which he used to melt skin off of.
What? Women. Who would want that?
Here, another funny tidbit that's funny dark. I like dark humor, if you haven't figured that out already. This woman used it for years as a planner. It was on her front stoop, and she just put her plants in it. And it wasn't to one when the woman passed away, her son was like, "Oh, this is a plant thing." And then he realized, wait a minute, something's off about this. And someone got a hold of him because he put it on for sale or something, like on Facebook or whatever. And someone goes, "Do you know what you have there?" And he's like, "Yeah, it's just a plant." He goes, "No, that's Ed Gein's cauldron. That's where he melted the skin off of people's bones in there."
Wow.
And he just went, believe it or not, he did what I call good old Ed Baggins from Ghost Hunters did buy the cauldron for like $3,000.
Yeah.
So he's in
Is it in his museum in Vegas? Is that where that is?
Yuck. Wait, you're talking about Zach Baggins with the
ghost
stuff in Vegas?
He owns the cauldron right now. He called the guy, I guess, and he said, actually put it up for auction. I'm sorry. They put it up for auction. Good old Ed Baggins bought it, and it is in his museum in Vegas. You can go and see it, or go to my Instagram page, and I have a picture of it. And you can see where the lady, you can still see where the dirt is, where the plants went in. Just like, what?
That's so cute.
So the guy put it like on Facebook Market, and then as soon as he found out it was Ed Gein's cauldron, he did like an auction for it.
Yeah, he put it on auction.
I don't know. That's awesome,
right.
That's not a lot of money.
Right.
No, $1,000. That's pretty cheap.
Crazy. Wow.
That's gonna appreciate. But let us know about his his items, Carolyn, that he had.
Yeah, so this is a disgusting list. I'm actually going to skip a few of these because I refuse to say them out loud. But basically, this is a list of the evidence that was collected at Ed Gein's house. So they found whole human bones and fragments of bones. They found a waste basket made of human skin. There was human skin covering several chairs, like dining room chairs. He had four skulls on his bedposts. There were skulls laying around the house. He had created like goblets and bowls out of some of these skulls that he was actually using to eat out of. They found a corset made from a female torso, which was skinned from the shoulders to the waist. So like John was saying, he would put that on and pretend to be a woman or pretend to be his mother and dance around with that corset. They found leggings or stockings that he had created out of a woman's leg skin, gloves made out of human hands. And then there were multiple masks made from the skin, from the face skin of the victims or from some of the bodies he had dug up. They actually found, so his two victims that were confirmed were Mary Hogan, who I believe she was like a tavern owner in the town. Yeah. And I think the two confirmed victims are interesting to me because Mary Hogan, I think she had kind of a reputation for being like a floozy around town and like a flirt, yeah, like what John was saying.
Yeah.
So I think that she was picked out because of that. But I think that his other victim, Bernice Warden, she was older and she was the one who owned the hardware store. I think that she may have resembled his mother to him. Maybe that's,
she could have been on to what he was doing, theory, but based upon
they found,
you know,
Mary
was probably getting a lot of stuff to build his crazy, you know, body art, I guess, body art, body furniture,
his mom suit. Yeah, right. Well, they actually found Mary Hogan's face as a mask. So he had created a mask out of her face. Oh, boy. They found Bernice Warden's head in a burlap sack, and they found her heart in a plastic bag, which was in front of his stove. They found body parts from teenage girls. So that's interesting. Like at least five different female 15-year-old girls or around that age. And they also found clothes from,
but no one was ever reported missing. And all those bodies, and did they even do any DNA testing? I guess, you know, back then we had some form of, you know, that's interesting.
Yeah, this was the 50s, so they really couldn't have done a DNA test back then. But, you know, we don't know who the seven other supposed victims
are. Yeah, no, I'm talking about now because, you know, they hold on to a lot of stuff. And did they ever go back? Yeah.
No, they should. You're right.
But I mean, he was a grave robber, though, so that those could have also and I'm not sure if he admitted to those being like from graves or whatever, you know, or if they just didn't know. But that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he did try to say that aside from the two that he admitted to killing, he tried to say that everything else in the home was from his grave robbing escapades. But just the last few items and then I'll you know, let someone else have the floor. But they found a pair of lips that he was using as a drawstring for his curtains.
What?
They found,
is this before Botox?
Shade made out of the face skin.
Is this before Botox?
Huh? Yeah. Just normal sized lips or whatever.
Normal size. I got you.
They found a lampshade. A lamp with a lampshade that was made out of a human face. So, and I think there's like recreations of that online that you can actually buy now, like a human face lamp.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's gross. And then they also found a belt made out of human nipples.
How many nipples
and
were involved?
Nipple belt? Nipple doorbell. Yeah.
How many classic nipples were involved?
Nipple belt. I want to say at least 15.
Are you serious?
I think it's says here, actually.
It was an uneven number, like not even double.
Wow.
Right. it doesn't say how many, but yeah, I think I've seen, you know, I want to say I've seen pictures of some of these items, but at the same time, I feel like this is the type of thing that they wouldn't put online. But oh, yep, I have it pulled up right here. There's a belt made out of human nipples.
Ew. Yeah. I don't even want to see that. Yeah. I don't want to look that
really
up.
Don't.
But here's the thing with that, with this whole thing. Obviously, he wasn't killing, you know, people that were alive because they would have been reported. People would have been looking for them, that whole process, right? There, either he was working for the mafia and he was the one getting rid of the bodies that were coming from different states and cities.
Just keeping them in his house and making furniture.
Or he was in cahoots with the people who ran the cemetery. And they were reusing coffins and they were giving him those bodies and they weren't burying people. And so they wouldn't tell the cops. They wouldn't say anything to anyone just based upon he's doing them a favor. So, because, you know, there's a lot you hear about that going on with certain funeral homes that run cemeteries, they actually reuse the coffins, and or you find the bodies stacked in the back, and the people were never buried. So so yeah, there was something going on. Somebody had to know what he was doing for him to have so many bodies and so many different parts of bodies.
Well, one thing about Ed Gein, and I'm sure John knows more about this, but he was known in the town as like a weirdo, a recluse, like John kind of already said. So people really just, and his whole family before they died, they were a weird family. So I think people just kind of avoided that family, that house, and they just kind of left Ed Gein alone and didn't ever bother him or think about him. Because after his family died and he inherited the house, he literally was on his own. He didn't have a social life outside of, you know, doing odd jobs and babysitting. He had no social life whatsoever. So he was up to his own devices pretty much all the time, which is very apparent from his house. I mean, if anyone ever would have stepped foot in his house, they would have immediately called the police and reported him. So he had years and years of just doing whatever he wanted and doing all this really dark
stuff.
Yeah,
but in that sense, he would have to dig up the body, take it out of the coffin or the hole, and put the dirt back. You know, I mean, that, come on.
But he had the time. He had plenty of time to do it.
That's what I'm saying. Like nobody would notice the groundskeepers.
I mean, there's so many. I think someone was involved, whether it was his brother, someone was helping him or giving him access to corpses, whether it was the local hospital, you know, or just things would happen. And, you want somebody gone. Well, let's call Ed, you know.
For the sheer number of body parts that they found in his house, I can see why you would think that. But at the same time, I feel like back then, grave robbing was a little more common than it is today. Because people would do that back then to like find jewelry and coins and things like that. So I'm sure that people noticed something was going on. I just don't think they ever put two and two together.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. What I looked up, sorry, John, real quick. What I looked up, no one ever said that a cemetery or funeral home complained about missing bodies or freshly dug holes or all these particular things. So that's the only reason why I say that. But go ahead, John. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you put a new angle on this, Bobby. He was an entrepreneur. All right. He was a guy just looking to make a few bucks just to kind of have a little fun and maybe
a furniture maker.
Go to one of those flea markets and put his lamps out there and be like, look at my lamp.
We did an episode.
Businessman.
And it was crazy questions. And one of the questions were like, what would you do? How would you get rid of a body? And I think Carolyn had, what did you have? You had something about, I think you were dig a hole or.
I think Amy said. I think
somebody acid, said barrel.
Right?
Oh, yes. Acid and then dumping a cauldron in the ocean or something like that. You said.
Yeah,
you
that's what Carolyn said in the middle of the desert. Right? So
the desert,
he had to get creative with how and whoever was giving him access to these bodies, because again, I'm not going to say he murdered anyone because he's only, responsible for two particular bodies, but he had access to a lot of bodies. So he was like, I can't get rid of these people. I can't burn them up. I don't have the acid pile. I don't have the barrel. So let me go ahead and make furniture. So, and then not only that, I'm going to make a skin suit because my mama's always tripping and she's had me under her wing and I can't stand her. So I'm going to make her, you know, a representation of her. So obviously the man had mental issues for sure, for anybody to do all the things he's done, but someone knew that and they played into it and gave him access. That's what I believe.
Wow. This has gone really dark.
Bobby loves a good conspiracy theory. He's always looking for another angle.
Love it. Love it.
It's possible. You never know.
Well, you do, right? And and Bobby is exactly right. There was a recent story about this funeral home. I think it was in on the East Coast, where exactly what Bobby was saying. They were putting the bodies in back, and then people would pay like X amount of dollars, and then they'd be like, "Wait a minute, like This looks exactly like my Uncle George coffin that right. I buried like 6 months ago. Yeah. Like, wait a minute. Oh, it's, you know, and they would make up, oh, it's the same brand and model, you know.
That's crazy.
You know. Are you talking about the one, the story where it was this guy who owned the funeral home and he had actually been a football player and kind of almost famous, but he got into the family business and then they just found in his backyard, in his shed, stacks of bodies. Like, yeah, I think there was like,
oh my God,
60 or 70 bodies.
That's a new one.
No. That's not who you're talking about?
No. This is that, like, yeah.
Why would
now you're really scaring me.
Why aren't they just cream, you know? So I was thinking they were burying the bodies, digging it up, and then putting it through the cremation process. Like, why even?
These were older.
In your backyard.
These were older funeral homes. They didn't have a crematorium on the premises. So how they would do it, they would just
there's some exactly. shady shit goes down. That's in these why. Funeral yeah, homes,
you better.
Guys.
You may have watched your loved one all the way through the whole process because you never know.
Yep.
Damn right.
Want to watch them put them in the hole?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
All right, so do we want to, I know you had also, John, about Mr., I don't know, just call him Mr., but Dahmer. Do we want to move into that realm? Or, Carolyn, do you have more?
Well, was that all your tidbits about Ed Gein, or did you actually know? Oh, it was that your aunt was babysat by him. Is that the?
Well, not my aunt, like a friend of mine who has a podcast talks about kind of the same similar things. His aunt was that.
Oh, okay.
Just one other thing before I would get to my story too, once we get to that, is so Plainfield is about 2 hours away from me. So I could literally get in my car and drive out to it. What Benson said is true. It is an overgrown lot. If you look at Google Maps, it's non-distinct. It's nothing really. You would probably pass it. It's one of those towns too. Mm. If you blink, you miss it. But it is true that there was a guy that was going from Illinois that was going to buy Ed Gein's house and turn it into a museum. Correct. And then it mysteriously burned down. But I have spoken to paranormal investigators who have investigated that plot of land, and they all say the same thing. If it's a woman, they feel like they're being violated. I don't know how
like to freaked out that.
They also have told their hair has been pulled. They feel someone touching their arm. Most people say they're on there. It's just feeling of dread. People have said they've seen like shadows. And most of the investigators I spoke to who investigated it have said they're there for maybe half an hour, and then they're like, we're out of here. Like, really? It's just as soon as you step on it, because the people I talk to are mediums or seers, or, you know, they can really, you know, feel things. And they've also said the same thing, like, this is a dark area, like, this is bad. This is bad. And no one can figure out why someone hasn't gone in and blessed it or tried to go in and cleanse it. But no, in one of these days, I told people, I'm there on Fridays, I'm going to drive out there and I'm just going to walk around and film it and see if I feel anything or if there's anything to do.
That would be a great place.
Yeah, it is still private property. So yes, the police can come over and say, you need to leave. So you got to be careful if you are checking it out. I'd highly recommend maybe go to the local police station and be like, hey, I'm just checking this out. And is it okay? And they'll probably be like, your funeral, buddy. Whatever. Right.
Is it fenced off or can you kind of just walk onto
it? You walk right onto it.
It's interesting that it's just stayed a vacant lot. Like no one's tried to build anything else or tried to do anything with that land.
No one will build on it. They have said a million times, nobody's going to build on that ever.
Yeah.
It's too dark.
Yeah.
And too much dark history.
Well, not to kind of jump around in history, but just like an interesting note, I was going to, you know, kind of bring up his upbringing and his childhood. And it's not just the murders and the, you know, horrible things that Ed Gein did on the property that kind of tainted. It's that his whole upbringing was just miserable. His parents were weird and miserable and abusive. His mom like John touched on, was just this crazy religious, weird woman, and she hated men and she hated women, and she just kind of would tell the boys that women were evil and to stay away from them and they're whores and all this. And so it was a very abusive, confusing childhood for these boys. Then you have the fact that one of the brothers died on the property, possibly by Ed Gein's own hand. The dad was an alcoholic and the mom bullied the dad. And so it's just that you've got all this horrible energy leading up to Ed Gein and his atrocities and this house of horror that he created. So yeah, I can see why it would just be like really dreadful, awful energy on that.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised the dad didn't kill the mom. So that's very interesting.
Yeah,
he was a beaten down guy. He was just this mousy guy. Mm-hmm. That's what they said he was. He would just yes dear, yes dear, yes dear. Yeah. He doesn't fight back like I do with my wife. Not that we fight. I can say we love to argue. That's all I had to say.
Yeah, weird dynamics in the family. And then also, I don't know if this is 100% right, but I believe Ed Gein actually wound up going and digging up his mother's body too, right? And he brought it back to the house.
Yeah, there's rumors on that, and he tried to put it on the bed.
Yeah, or put it in her room.
He put it in her room. Yeah.
Wouldn't they check her?
I've heard that.
Oh, because wouldn't they just check her grave if he said that? Or I mean, that room?
No idea. Yeah,
Supposedly they found her body in the house, but yeah, it's just not verified, so it could just
be. Can I ask one question? Who was the sheriff? Barney Fife? Mm-hmm. Like, what's happening here? What's happening? What's going on?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Damn. Right?
Like, come just on.
Drop the ball.
Exactly.
Just whatever.
Jesus.
Right.
Hey Ed, how you doing with the lady?
Right.
Wow. Interesting.
Well, I think now we'd like to hear your other story, not to completely switch gears here, but you've got like a personal story relating to Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So one of the things was about Jeffrey Dahmer. You guys can talk about it a little more. But the story I have is my cousin in Milwaukee. He worked with Jeffrey Dahmer at the, and I can't remember the chocolate factory's name, but they worked side by side for years. Okay. In the heyday of Jeffrey Dahmer's killings. So what happened was my cousin, his friend was gay. And so everybody knew Jeffrey was gay. He was kind of a weird guy, but people just kind of dealt with him, you know. He was like, whatever. Anyone working in a chocolate factory 8 or 10 hours a day, you might think is heaven. It's pure hell, because all you do is smell chocolate. You taste like chocolate when you come. Yeah, sour off chocolate. I mean, it's just after a couple years of doing that, you're like, get me out of here.
I hate chocolate. I never want to say chocolate again.
Exactly. My cousin would always tell me that I would never eat chocolate again, because he worked there for like a few years. Anyway, so what happened was he was in the lunchroom with his friend, and Jeffrey Dahmer comes up and he's talking to my cousin's friend. I'll call him Bill. And Bill and him are talking. And he's like, hey, would you like to come out tonight for a drink? And Bill, I guess Jeffrey Dahmer was not his type. So he said, no, you know, thank you. But no, he's very polite about it. And I guess Jeffrey Dahmer just kind of walked it off. And it was no big deal, you know. So that night, they happened to go to the same bar that Jeffrey Dahmer was at. And Jeffrey Dahmer, if you remember at all, he would slip things into people's drinks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they would be like, oh, I'm really tired. So another word, roofie, you know, I guess the word, if you want to use it, unfortunately. Yeah. So they went to the bar and there's Jeffrey, and Bill made up a story. He was gonna be like, oh, I'm busy. You know, they hold like, you want to be nice, but you don't want to tell the person you don't want to date him. So when he walks in, there's Jeffrey, and Jeffrey's like, oh, hey, Bill, glad to see you. And he's hitting on Bill and they're talking and everything like that. And they're going through all this stuff. And my cousin's just kind of sitting there, and he's like, oh, this guy, something's not right about this. You know, he's just just bombarding, you know, Bill, hey, let's go back to my apartment. Let's come on, you know, just relentlessly hitting on him, right? And so, you know, it's like, hey, let's just get out of here. And he's trying to grab Bill. And Bill at this time is a little drunk because Jeffrey had been buying him drinks. And he notices Bill is starting to slur his speech and like act like weird and stuff. So he's like, mm-hmm. hey, man, you okay? What's going on? And Jeffrey looks at, and this is where my cousin, Ted, I will call him, mm-hmm. will never forget it. So my cousin Ted grabs Bill and he says, hey, man, let's go. It's time to go. And Jeffrey immediately grabs Bill and he just looks at my cousin Ted like, you better fucking let him go right
now. Oh, wow.
I'll kill you. Oh. You know, and just this cold predator stare. And, you know, my cousin doesn't take any shit from anybody. You know, he grew up in Milwaukee and he like, whatever. Mm-hmm. So he drags Bill out of there and Jeffrey comes out of the bar and he's still like, hey, man, you know, whatever. And they're just talking shit. So they get out of the bar and they get Bill home and you know, it's like, okay, what's going on? And then the next day Jeffrey shows up and he kind of acting weird towards everyone and you know, like weirder than normal.
Mm-hmm.
So now flash forward to the time when they are find Jeffrey Dahmer's apartment with the barrels. They're walking out with male body parts. The skulls, all this stuff out of this apartment. It was on the news. Go look at the video. And it's insane. It's like out of a horror movie. So at that time, my cousin Ted and his friend Bill happened to be watching the news just at that time. Right? It's like serendipity. And he's hearing more and more. And he all of a sudden he realizes, if I would have went to that apartment, that would have been me in one of those barrels.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that would have been his, you know, friend Bill in the barrels. Mm-hmm. No doubt at all, because he at that night killed somebody. I think it was a Filipino man.
Yeah. It's one Mexican guy, one Asian, and then the rest were 15 black gentlemen.
Yeah. So the police find out about this and they bring, I don't know why they did this, but they bring Bill in and they're questioning him and they're talking through him. And they basically told him, this is just that the police have literally no bed matter, whatever. They go, yeah, you could have been fucking dead, pal. You're lucky you got out of there. And here's the thing. So Bill freaked out like any one of us would do, right? He checked out of what I call hotel reality. He spent years in therapy, years in institutions.
That is so sad.
And just, he was messed up. Now, there's a happy ending to this. Bill is okay now. Me and my cousin, you know, we talk from time to time. And, you know, before I was going to talking about these stories, I wanted to see. He says, no, Bill's moved far away.
Yeah.
he's fine. He's dealing with it. He's married now. He has a partner. He seems to be doing fine. But here's the thing. You know when all those specials were coming on? Netflix?
Yeah.
And Jeffrey Dahmer
thing? It had to be traumatizing.
His partner canceled Netflix like that. Just canceled it.
Because
he could not. Movies, books. Like literally a guy walks into like a Barnes & Noble or any bookstore. And if he sees like a Jeffrey Dahmer book, it's like, get me out of here.
Yeah.
And that just made me realize how weird life is, because someone did a study at one time and I don't know, they must have a lot of free time on their hands. And they said that in your lifetime, more than likely you have either worked, met, or been in close contact with a serial killer and just didn't know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just
couldn't believe that someone I knew, now I did not know Bill very well, but I knew my cousin Ted very well, that actually met a serial killer of his caliber and almost was killed by him. That just blows me away to this day. I just can't believe that. That's just crazy, right?
Yeah. It's like that 7 degrees of separation. Like you, it's crazy. Even though it wasn't your direct friend, it's still crazy that you know someone who knew Jeffrey Dahmer and almost could have been a victim. And he had two other victims that escaped, and I think they went through similar traumatic experiences as your friend. It's a very weird, it must be like survivor's guilt almost, where you just, and not to mention the fear that you almost could have died. And
Yes. Just having that hang on you, just, you know, just waking up every morning and having to think about, you know, I almost went to his apartment. And you got to remember, like I said, this is in his heyday where he had skulls in his refrigerator. He had he had a bucket of penises in his.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
He just went to the local,
you know, adult shop and got some different colored things. That's it.
It's just weird in the sense too that it's close to where I live. You know, you just don't think about it. You know, because I've been in Milwaukee so many times, and I've been in that bar with my cousin. You know, he would invite me over. Hey, come on! I never saw Jeffrey Dahmer, but he would invite me over, and it was a fun little bar. You know, and it was nothing with it, and it was fun to hang out with. And just he chose that bar is weird too. It's just I don't know.
Well, he's probably following them or something. I mean, that is kind of a weird.
The messed up one to me was the Asian kid who was able to escape the apartment and then to see police officers and you're running up to them. You're like, okay, I'm gonna be, you know, I'm saved. I'm gonna get out of this. And then for them to give him back to him. Oh man.
They gave him back.
They thought he was drunk or something, right?
Yes.
He told them, Jeffrey Dahmer told the cops, oh, he's drunk. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
He had holes drilled into his head and he literally couldn't talk. And Jeffrey Dahmer said, oh, he's just drunk.
Yeah.
And they bought it. Yeah. And people don't understand too. The cops were in his apartment.
I think that's why the cops came, right? Because weren't neighbors complaining about the smell or something?
They were complaining about the smell. They were complaining about the noise. It was just weird. The other thing with Jeffrey Dahmer, like I said, here's my dark humor again that I remember, is his favorite movie to watch with people was Empire Strikes Back. I don't know why. But he would literally, he loved Empire Strikes Back, and he would
it was The Exorcist. You're right, because he would wear those yellow contact lenses to be like a character from Empire Strikes Back. You're right. Yeah,
and he did like The Exorcist, but his go-to movie, date movie, would be to put
it
in
Empire Strikes Back. Because it was popular. He knew people would, you have that. Let's go over and watch. Let's go home and watch it. Let's go to your house. Like, you know.
Right.
Was he the first person who really started roofing people on that scale? Did Bundy do it too?
Bundy did it. But maybe I could be wrong. I could be wrong on that.
He was like a chlorophyll, I think, right? Ted Bundy,
Or he would just hit them in the head with something.
That was a tire iron.
Man.
Well, thank goodness that your cousin was there that night.
And to this day, he didn't know why he showed up, because he didn't feel like showing up. He was like, he just felt something was off. He kept on telling me, like, man, there's just something about this guy. Like, he's just too, like, desperate to be with my, you know, with my friend. Like, you know what I mean? You might be out at the club or something, and there's this drunk guy hitting on your friend. You know, like, all right, pal, you know.
Yeah.
And usually they back off, but he did not. Wow. He just kept coming and coming. So
it's like you said, it's like a predator thing. Like, you can kind of tell the difference when someone's just being a little creepy and weird versus like they've got their eye on you, like you are their prey. They are going to kill you. Like,
absolutely.
See, that's just crazy. That's why I don't do that much true crime, creepy. If any true crime. This is probably the first real true crime stuff we've talked about. But because people are scarier than actual ghosts. Yes, ghosts are creepy because you don't know what they are. You don't know if they're real, your eyes playing tricks on you or whatever that's happening, right? But people, you know, got to watch out for them. The living can be really dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no horror movie, in my opinion, that can capture some of these serial killers that have done to people, you know, including Dean and Dahmer and Bundy and all these other guys who are just, you're like, what? Like, how could you do that? I mean, what makes you do that? I don't know. I can't figure it out.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, well, it's been a fantastic show with you, John. But before we get out of here, I want to ask you, you have any, you know, new projects coming up with your podcast, any new, you know, guests that you want to actually, you know, get on as far as another, you know, podcast that you're really looking to focus on?
Well, you guys are always welcome to come on, because I love you guys. You guys are the greatest. But I have a new thing out that I'm trying to see if this works or not. Because typically, like I said, I do the interviews and stuff. What I wanted to do was I have a thing called Nightland Frights, and it's just the spookiest tales from my guest. It's no guest on the show. It's not me making fun of myself or the guests or having a little fun. It's strictly scary, creepy, just true stuff or stories I found off, you know, Reddit or something. And I try to put it out there so people can get a good scare. You know, like you said, Bobby, you listen to scary tales sometimes before you go to bed. And it's just that. And I'm just trying it for right now because I'm like, you know, I'm going to try something a little different, see if people would like this too, kind of give them a little different from the guests, from, you know, just something spooky that just was, keep you up.
Yeah, I think it'll be amazing.
Little nightmares.
And is that on your, is that Dairyland or is that a separate
podcast? Yeah, no, it's on my Dairyland. I didn't separate. I just call it Nightland Frights. And I try to do it once a month or whenever I get time just to put it out there for fun. And I like to, I like to scare myself too. I like to find stories out there, not only true stories or what you believe are true stories, but I also love when the guests tell me about their growing up and what they saw and what they experienced. And then, you know, I take that, like I said, and I just put that on there to, you know, give people a nice little little nightmare.
That sounds like a fun show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Good idea.
Yeah. So I'm going to put it out there, see how people like it. And, you know,
amazing.
There, I guess.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm going to check that out for sure.
So one more thing. It's always that one more thing. If someone was starting a new podcast, what would you tell them to help them have an easier road in the process than what you and myself and the ladies have gone through?
Well, I would get decent internet. Carolyn. I'm picking on Carolyn. Nice. I got Carolyn.
The ghost in my house. You're always messing with my equipment.
It's creepy internet. It's possessed internet, Carolyn.
It's possessed.
I gotta bring in a priest.
That's why my mic wasn't working either.
Gosh, you're possessed all over the place. Get in a priest, woman. What I would say is, number one is be themselves. Because I think a lot of people try to come in and they try to be something else. I don't know why. Don't copy anybody else. Just be yourself and have fun with it. The other thing I would tell them is pick some topics that you love and maybe be a niche. Because like I said, I'm in the Midwest typically. And nobody was really doing Midwest stuff, like predominantly just Midwest in that area. Just because I know the area very well. I love this area. I love the people. There's some crazy stories that a lot of people don't even know about that I found out. I'm like, where the hell did that come from? That's really terrible. Like, I can't believe that's the Midwest. I would say the last thing is don't get yourself caught up with numbers and everything, just go out and just do it and just be like, you know, if it works, yeah, great. If it doesn't, so what? You know, I had fun doing it. So yeah,
have fun.
Yeah. That's yeah, so true.
Yeah.
That's great advice. And I definitely think you guys can adhere to it out there. And also, if you do a podcast and you start it, always think that you might end up doing it alone. So don't be afraid of that, because you can start out
one. Yes. Don't be afraid to be like, okay, I'm going to do this alone and then whatever. Yeah. And just try it. You know, it's okay. You know, as long as you love
what you're just having conversations with the person or yourself or your co-host or your guest. And then, you know, someone's listening in on that conversation, basically. So, yeah,
absolutely. I would add to that. That's a great point really quick is, you know, part of the reason I got into this, too, is because I would talk a lot about the paranormal at a bar or a party or something. And I would have people like, well, you should do a podcast or something like that, because they could see the love I have for it and the interest I have for it. And, mm-hmm, you know, I think that's true. If you have something you're really interested in and you have something to say, yeah, go ahead. Perfect. Go ahead and do it.
Yeah, if you're passionate about it, it's easy to just get into it and talk about it.
Yeah, it's like you're talking at a bar to your friend. Like, it's like you're having a couple of drinks or whatever, and you're like, hey, I found this really cool story about this ghost. Let me tell you about it. And be like, oh, yeah, that's awesome.
And those are the best podcasts where it's just laid back, people talking, having a conversation. And, absolutely, you know, even if it gets a little off topic sometimes, it's actually engaging and fun to listen to, because it's like you're sitting there with your buddy, you know, having a conversation.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
That's why I like your podcast, Dairyland, because you are so laid back. I mean, you have like a script and a topic, but at the same time, you're very like loose with it, like whatever. You just go with the flow with your guests. Yep. I love it.
Yeah, I just want people to have fun and just, because we're talking about dark, deep subjects, right? Like, what's life beyond this? Is there a ghost? Is there a demon on my back? How do I get rid of it?
Get real depressing.
Yeah. Get like real depressing. Be like, oh my God. My, you know, house is possessed. How do I get, you know, well, maybe do this, and you know.
awesome. All right, well, again, thank you for coming on Strange Darkness Radio, and you're always welcome to come back, because you know, you're fantastic, and you make Carolyn light up like a Kaplinko machine. She doesn't know what that means. She's too young but
You guys are the greatest too. And you know, like I tell all my spooky friends who are gonna be listening to this, definitely listen to Strange Darkness Radio. Bobby, Amy, and Carolyn, they always have fun. They always have great guests on, like me.
Love it.
Sometimes. But they always have great topics. I love that you guys have a different point of view. And that's why I love listening to you guys and listening to other podcasts, because we're not the same. It's like, if you want to listen to something a little different, listen to Strange Darkness. If you want to listen to mine, have a little fun, listen to this. If you want to have kind of a combination, listen to both of us. Either way, we just love that you listen and that we can entertain you and maybe take your mind off some things.
Or make you think.
About digging up graves and making land in Cahoon with the funeral parlor.
Or the mafia.
Be careful who you go to.
I'd rather see... Come on, we got to get back to the UFOs.
Right. Yeah, so you don't wind up a skull.
Probed by Dahmer or probed by E.T.? I think I would take E.T. I'd go the Amy route. I'd take E.T.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's no competition. Exactly. I would take E.T. every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. I get it. Yeah.
Okay, well, great show. Thanks again, ladies.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. You're always fun to talk to. You have great, you're a great storyteller, great personality. So it was a great show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, love listening to your stories, and you're a lot of fun. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I love you guys. Anytime you want me on or whatever.
Yeah, we're going to have to start booking him. That's the problem. We're going to be like, probably 6 months down the road, we can do something. But amazing. Everyone, good night.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
As your journey through the shadow realms of Strange Darkness Radio concludes, remember that you unlock the door to the paranormal with the key of imagination. Beyond it lies another dimension, a dimension of eerie soundscapes, chilling sights, and the profound depths of the mind. You're venturing into a land of both haunting shadows and tangible substance, where the ethereal meets the corporeal and ideas take on a spectral form. You've just crossed over into the Strange Darkness Radio Zone. In the vast expanse of the paranormal, there exists a fifth dimension, extending beyond the known realms of our understanding. It is a dimension vast as the cosmos and eternal as infinity. A mysterious terrain between the illumination of light and the depths of shadow. This is the middle ground between the empirical and the supernatural, where fears fester in the pit of humanity's soul and knowledge ascends to its zenith. Welcome to the dimension of imagination, an area we dub the Strange Darkness Radio Zone. As you conclude your journey with us, remember that you're departing this peculiar zone, a place where reality intertwines with the surreal. Be cautious as you step out, for you may find that the boundaries between the normal and the paranormal blur, leaving you forever in the lingering embrace of the unknown. Until next time, farewell from the depths of the Strange Darkness Radio Zone.
I can-